Well, don't miss the boat. Right now, it's 1 p.m. in New York City at 99.5 FM WBAI and WBAI.org. It's been so long since we've talked to you. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with Stephanie Dombra, The Positive Mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And positively minded life, boy. Do you ever get into one of those minds where everything goes wrong? No matter what you do, something goes wrong. It's just one of those days. And then, not only does it go wrong, but something silly. I remember hearing from a man. He said he was standing at a corner, and it started to rain. And he caught himself, he was caught in the rain. And he was trying to get through the traffic, but he was caught in the rain. And he said, oh my gosh, it's going to rain, it's going to ruin my suit. Oh, it's going to do this, oh, it's going to do that. Oh, my shoes are going to get ruined, and how am I going to get to work? I'll never get a cab today. That's one way of being. He was standing there, and he was at the corner, and there was another guy standing next to him, and that man looked up at him and said, boy, this is something, isn't it? But the man wasn't protecting himself, and he was just getting rained on. And the original guy, who was a psychologist, looked at him and he said to himself, how could that be? How could he be okay with rain? Hey, it's only rain. But there are things that we do at times, and there are moods that we set and sometimes have, where everything seems to go wrong, and everything seems like it's bigger than it is. Rainer Heilregel, psychiatrist, used to work for me. I said, Rainer, what do you do for a living? He says, Velarmond. Well, that was a German-French accent. Velarmond, maybe that was a Hebrew-French accent. I'll do it without an accent. He said, there are mice and there are elephants. He said, and people see mice as elephants. And I try to show them that the elephants are only mice. And that's what he did for a living. Well, that makes sense. Why do we do such a thing? Why do we sometimes see a problem that's a relatively small problem as huge? Okay, let's go back. Fear. Remorse. One of the descriptions of neurosis, or being crazy, is that you either live in the past or you live in the future. You live in the past with remorse. I shoulda, if only, I coulda. And if you listen to people very often, if you listen to folks who beat themselves up, you know, people who like to punish themselves, you've met the kind that are always talking badly about themselves. It's almost like they're going to beat themselves up before you could beat them up. I should have gone to school. I should have become a doctor. I should have done this. I should have done that. It's like you're shooting on each other. You're shooting on yourself, you know. Shooting is the word I'm using. So that's one kind of self-punishment. That's making enormous your entire past and any decision you made. You can always say, I should have made another decision. I remember once during a great football game, where there was the last play of a football game where the team lost. And I was sitting around with a bunch of guys, and I said, he should have punted. And they said, he couldn't have punted. It wouldn't have made any sense to punt. He needed to score, whatever. I said, well, he should have punted. And they said, why? I said, because whatever he did didn't work. So maybe he should have done something else, whatever it is. You could live with great regrets. That's one way of keeping your mind occupied and chemically depressed. That's one way. That's what depressed people do. The other way is living with fear. Now, fear is about the future. What could happen? What's the truth? What's about to happen? What is the fear? What could happen? And therefore, any significant thing that is happening now has greater significance. It's called catastrophizing. Catastrophizing is a concept that comes from a thing called psychosynthesis. A psychologist, Assaglioli, which always sounds like a kind of oil, came up with this incredible work that he did with youth. And he said, watch out for the children who catastrophize. Now, what is catastrophizing? Catastrophizing is an irrational thought a lot of us have in believing that something is far worse than it actually is. Catastrophizing can take one of two forms. The first of these is making a catastrophe out of a situation. For instance, you're a salesperson and you haven't made a sale in a while. You may believe that you're a complete and utter failure and you'll lose your job. In reality, it may only be a temporary situation, and there are things that you could do to change the situation. Another example is believing that if you make one small mistake on your job, you may get fired. That's called catastrophizing. But this kind of catastrophizing takes a current situation and gives it a truly negative spin. How many of you do that? You get a little negative. You take it all the way out to the end of disaster. People like this very often can have panic attacks over a small thing. You know, I miss my train. I miss my train. Oh, I really want it. And then everything goes wrong, you know. The second kind of catastrophizing is closely linked to the first, but it is more mental and more future-oriented. This kind of catastrophizing occurs when we look at the future and anticipate all the things that could go wrong. We then create a reality around those thoughts because we believe something will go wrong. We make it go wrong. It's bound to all go wrong for me. So you meet somebody for the first time, and then you want to go out on a date with him. Right? And then he doesn't call. And then you make up a thing. And you say, oh, he's not calling because of this terrible thing. Oh, because he saw that I had pimples or something. And you make it worse and you worse and worse. And then if he does happen to call, you don't want to see him because you've already created a disaster. That's catastrophizing. Falling prey to catastrophizing is like striking out in your mind before you even get to the plate. And both these types of catastrophizing limit your opportunities in life, in work, in relationships, and more. It can affect our entire outlook on life and create a self-fulfilling prophecy of failure, disappointment, and unachievement. Both forms of catastrophizing may lead to self-pity, to an irrational negative belief about the situation, and to a feeling of hopelessness about your future prospects. Further, both types of catastrophizing will define either the presence or absence of alternate possibilities and possibly paralyze you from going further with efforts towards your goals in life. You know, sometimes it's based on a mood. You can be in a mood to see everything negative. You see, the future is negative. You begin to worry. Or you look back on your past and you start seeing the past as negative. And you find a disaster out of the fact that you made certain decisions. It seems to be based on mood. For some people, for other people, they catastrophize all the time. I used to have a good friend, my friend Richie. He and I would always laugh because either one of us would catastrophize. The other would exaggerate it. Like, I remember a time when there was a birthday cake and Richard was cutting a piece of a birthday cake. And in cutting through the birthday cake, he cut through the name on the cake. And I overreacted and I said, Richard, if you're going to cut through a piece of birthday cake, you should leave the name intact. And Richard said, oh my God, did I destroy this person by truncating their name? Did I in some way affect their future, their birthday? Did I destroy it? I can't believe it. Maybe I'll try to put it back. And he started working at putting the name back by smearing the cake around. Not funny to you. It was hilarious to me. That's what good friends do for you. The first step in dealing with catastrophizing is to recognizing that you're doing it. The sooner you do that, the quicker you'll be able to start focus on stopping it. You know, but it's hard to do. It's hard to do. When you get in that scramble brain, that brain that's going to worry, it's very hard to do it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, talking about catastrophizing, the fine art of catastrophizing. It's a catastrophe. Today's common understanding of catastrophe, a sudden disaster, is not the word's original meaning. It first meant, catastrophe meant, a reversal of what is expected. Something altogether more broad, more benign, and perhaps more useful. You'll see it in connection with words like apostrophe, whose etymology means, in effect, a turning point. You know, the apostrophe is a turning point. The extension of meaning to sudden disaster was recorded in 1748, some 200 years after the first use of the word. 1748, they turned catastrophe. The fine art of catastrophizing. Many of us unknowingly invite catastrophe into our lives on a regular basis. Not that anything bad happens. It's just that we tend to look at a challenge that is facing us and then imagine the very worst thing that could happen. This is what it sounds like for me. I could never challenge my boss because she might get angry with me. And then she'd put me on nothing but bad projects. And then I'd fail at these projects. And then I'd lose my job. And then I wouldn't be able to find another job. And then my wife would leave me. And then I'd have to sell the house, and I'd start drinking, and I'd end up on the streets homeless, and then I'd be dead before I'm 40, and no one will even notice. I better not get angry at my boss. It's almost humorous when you see it written down. You know, you heard it spoken by me, but for many of us, this style of thinking is all too familiar. It paralyzes us. It keeps us small. It keeps us playing safe and not taking chances to do something differently, to explore something new. This type of thinking, this thing catastrophizing, is a symptomatic way of seeing the world that sees the bad and happens to you as part of your pervasive and ubiquitous tide of pain and evil. Albert Ellis, who did rational emotive therapy, he made the word even more popular. And the bottom line is explained, the world's not fair, deal with it. That's it, that's the phrase. The world's not fair, deal with it. Catastrophizing is more than just a limited way of thinking, it's actually bad for your health. A study in 1998 by Christopher Peterson concluded that the tendency to catastrophize was linked to an increased risk of dying before the age of 65. males with a tendency to catastrophize were at a higher risk for early death. They were 25% more likely to die by age 65 than men with other attitudes, and they were especially high risk for death by, believe it or not, get ready, what do you think you die from if you're a catastrophizer? A heart attack? Stroke? High blood pressure? Nope. Accidents or violence? Because there's something about being a scared rabbit, you know, about running around in fear. It attracts aggression and it creates accidents. If you want to try to figure yourself out around this area, try to figure how much time you spend trying to figure out how to handle possible future problems. How often in reality do these imagined events come to pass? How much time do you spend in the future? Thinking about the future, worrying about the future, playing in the future, figuring out the future. How much time do you spend in the future? How much time do you spend in the past? Now here comes our big, many repeated three rules of life. Stephanie, what are the three basic rules of all living things? Stephanie and I discovered this alike and we just love it. Three basic rules of all living beings.
Find something to eat, pass on your genes, and don't get eaten.
Three rules. Find something to eat. Pass on your genes, which I reinterpret, not only pass on your genes, but that includes creativity. Do something meaningful that reproduces you in some way, and don't get eaten. Find something to eat, and don't get eaten. Well, if you're going to be in the present, you see, if you're going to find something to eat and not get eaten, you got to worry a little bit. You have to be a little careful. You have to find what you need. You have to avoid being eaten, but it's a little bit. If you're worried all the time, it's not so easy. How much of your time do you spend in the future? How much of your time do you spend being here? Catastrophizing is a way of creating fear and inducing fear. Here's a couple of ways to break the cycle. Write down the whole catastrophizing process, like the example I just gave you before. And then for each of the different steps, estimate the odds that it'll actually happen to you. For example, I'm standing in the rain. My shoes are getting wet. They're going to get destroyed. I'm going to have to throw them away. I'm going to have to buy new shoes. I don't have the money for new shoes. I'll have to buy old shoes. They're going to hurt my feet. I'm going to have to walk with a limp. That's catastrophizing. Write it down. See how far you can stretch it. Now, I had a man who trained me. His name was Dr. Peter Hogan. He had a process of therapy, Gestalt therapy, called And Then What? And here's the way he would do it. He would say, and then what, to every fear that you would have. So I'll give you an example, dealing with phobias, and I use this in dealing with phobias. A man says, I get on an airplane, I'm afraid to get on an airplane. And goes, Peter Hagen says, okay, imagine yourself on an airplane, and then what? Oh, I'm on the airplane, and I'm nervous, okay. And then what? Oh, I'm so nervous, I'm beginning to pee in my pants. Okay, and Peter accepts everything you say, and he says, and then what? And then I go up in the air, and now I'm flying, and I just can't stand how frightened I am because I know the plane's going to crash. Peter says, okay, you're up in the air now, and you're flying, and you know the plane's going to crash, and then what happens? And the plane begins to descend, and it starts to crash. Okay, the plane's going to crash, and now what happens? Now it's headed right for the earth, and then what happens? I crash. Okay, and then what happens? I die. And then what happens? My body is just there. And then what happens? They bury me. And then what happens? I'm laying in a casket. And then the soil mixes with my body over time. And then I become food for the worms. And then I go back to the soil. And then I grow into a flower. And then I greet the sunshine. That would be a typical process that Peter would take you through, having you go the whole way. Because the interesting thing about catastrophizing is you get locked into a middle place of where it's all bad. So he would just keep pushing you. Therapists out there use this technique. It's kind of amazing. Sometimes people go into a perfect circle. They say, and then what? And then I just sit there. And now I just keep sitting there. And then I just keep sitting there. Okay, you've sat there now for 2 years. What happened? Well, I died because I didn't have any water. Okay, and then what? You have to watch for those perfect circles that people go in. They're always a little bit of a trap, as if imagining they're going to keep you stuck with them. So ways of breaking out of it, try to imagine what could happen and then write down what are the odds for each of these happening to you. For example, I'm wet now and I'm crossing the street. I could get struck by lightning. Write down what are the odds of getting struck by lightning. And then continue with all the things that happen. And if I don't get struck by lightning, I may get hit by a car because the car can't see me. What are the odds of that? And if you're any kind of a mathematician, you'd be amazed at the chances that there are of anything happening to you. And it sometimes gives you an idea of reality. The actual chance of finding catastrophe happening by melting together the various percentages is unbelievable. The second technique, and it's one that I borrowed from Benjamin Zander from his book, The Art of Possibility. Stand up, throw your arms in the air, and declare out loud how fascinating. This is effective because it shifts your physical state. It points to how seriously you're taking everything, and it frames the situation as a learning moment. You see, everything new that happens to you that looks like a disaster is a learning moment. And some of the things are disasters. Some of the things are terrible. My friend dies, right? My best friend dies. Catastrophe, catastrophic. But I'll get through it. And I'll carry him in my heart forever, or her in my heart forever. Catastrophe for the rest of my life? No. Now, Armand DeMille here, we're talking about catastrophes. We're going to take your call after the break today. We're going to take a break at 12:30, 1:30. And in the end, remember Mark Twain's comment. He said, I've had a lot of problems in my life, and most of them never happened. That was Mark Twain. So the first step, again, to dealing with catastrophe is recognizing when you're doing it. The sooner you do it, the quicker you'll be able to start focusing on stopping it. It's like being negative. You know, how often do you recognize when you're being negative? You say you're not being negative, but you just notice you're being negative. We have a thing around here we call essence. Essence is trying to reach down to the part of you that's just your essential being. And it's only your friends or someone who loves you who could be the gatekeeper of your essence at times. Because if you're not there, sometimes you usually don't notice it. You're lost in your head. Catastrophizing is like it. Now, friends can help you with catastrophe. They can help you by either exaggerating it and saying, oh my God, this is really terrible. And if you talk to your boss that way, we could wind up with an earthquake in Chile. I mean, you could really push it out there all the way. But the quicker you're able to notice it, the faster you'll start recognizing on stopping it. And it might be a little helpful to start recording your negative thoughts to yourself on a pad of paper, right? Over a week's time, you begin to see a pattern emerge of when you're most likely to catastrophize. And this is going to be interesting. Over a month, you're going to find that there are days of the month when you tend to catastrophize the most. Meaning there are days of the month when your body wants to enter a worrisome position more than other days. And I can see them, you know, if you're overly energetic, overly dopamine, low serotonin, chemicals can make this happen. There are times that you just want to get your brain burning. You know, Stephanie, I was thinking about that. There are times when you want to feel fear, because the fear will feed you with both adrenaline and a number of other hormones that will, in some way, what would it do for you?
Well, that's why people go to scary movies. They really like to be kind of jolted. And so I think problems and situations, I mean, people do this all the time around our climate and things in our everyday life. You could come up with any number of things that would be overwhelming. And so because you think about it and you can get yourself agitated.
And if you get yourself agitated, what does it do for your brain? What does it do for the chemistry?
Well, I'm sure that it can stimulate adrenaline and cortisol, and then at least on that level, things are revved up. Probably dopamine, but I think, you know, it's hard to really pinpoint what's going on, because most of the time it's not coming with positivity, those thoughts, those negative worries.
So we have a way of creating a response. You know, they said that thing about cortisol. Cortisol, adrenaline, is a replacement for missing cortisol.
For missing serotonin?
Missing serotonin. Adrenaline works when you're low on serotonin. So this could be premenstrual or it could be menopausal. And when your serotonin is dropping down, one of the things your mind will do is become agitated and you will get adrenaline. Now, the adrenaline, which easily comes from catastrophizing, right? You now have this adrenaline, and adrenaline seems to replace the serotonin, but it's a fool's gold. Why is that?
It's only short term. After a while, I think it breaks the system down if you allow adrenaline to just run your system. You don't really want to be in that overdrive state.
So adrenaline works against you as a way of dealing with a mood slide into serotonin, right?
Ultimately, it's supposed to be used just for situations. That's, I think, how it's designed in our body.
That's the way it was built, to help us find something to eat.
And, or run.
Or find a mate. So, back to catastrophizing. Stopping yourself from catastrophizing takes a few conscious efforts on your part, patience and time. But if you try the few steps and really start answering yourself back, those irrational thoughts that serve no positive purpose will lessen in frequency and strength. And before it, knowing you know it, the catastrophizing will be a thing in the past. But keep in mind that when you are looped in to an anxiety condition of fear, it is virtually impossible to believe that you're just crazy. You just don't believe it. You say, no, this is real. It's real. My fear is real. That's where your friends really help. That's where you need somebody, something to say to you, hey, it's not such a big deal. Calm down. Calm down. It's not such a big deal. You know, that's what parents would do, fathers would do with their kids. You know, that's what they'd say. It's all right. It'll be okay. Everything's going to be okay. That's what good parenting is. It seems to me that people who catastrophize never really had a good parent. Because if that parent was recorded in your mind, it wouldn't happen as much. You'd know you're going to be okay. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have a short interlude, and then we will take your telephone calls on 212-209-2900. We'll be right back. back with you with the positive mind, bringing you some ideas, concepts, thoughts. We're talking about catastrophizing today. The wrong turn that the brain takes into fear and doubting. You know, our minds take this wrong turn into fearful and doubting to figure out where reliable guidance and support can be found. Ironically, that's the search, you know. Where can I find the truth? Where can I find the truth? Where can I find what's real? How am I going to deal with it? What's going to happen? How am I going to deal with that? How am I going to deal with that? Ironically, the more you question and strategize, the less secure you feel. The more you make plans, you would imagine if a person is catastrophizing the rain, right? Making a catastrophe out of the rain. Well, I'll finally get to the house. And when I get to the house, I'll be able to take off my clothes and put them on a hanger, and I'll let them dry out, and everything will be okay. By the time you get to that point, you've got even more stress. It's not a way that works. It's only rain. 212-209-2900. In just a minute, we're going to take your calls. The less secure, rather than give yourself the security you seek, being identified with these anxious thoughts makes you feel small, helpless, and without direction. Catastrophizing is childlike. In fact, its original concept was to treat children who do this. It's a childlike experience. Only by seeing through your fearful thinking pattern can you begin to reconnect with what is what we call your essential nature. When you do that, you rediscover your own inner authority, and you begin to recognize that the support you've been seeking is everywhere and is here right now. Find yourself here. Be here. You'll deal with everything. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take what are you called? Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi. My question is, what do you do in place of catastrophizing?
Yeah, well, give me an example of it.
I don't know. I'm asking you.
I know. Give me an example of when you catastrophize. A typical thing that you would do.
I can't think of anything off the moment.
Well, yeah, but you do it, right?
Yeah.
You know it. Well, give me an example of the last thing that really just hit you where you were worried. And we could use that as an example.
Okay, the economy's bad. You lose your job. And you can't pay your rent, and you end up in the street.
Exactly. That's catastrophizing. And when you get it, I mean, did that happen to you as a general theme in your life? Or is it that something happened that triggered that thought? Did you read a newspaper that said, market fell 250 points, jobless claims are all the way up? Is that what happened? Or did something happen to you that triggered that series of thoughts?
Just listening to the news, how many people are out of work and losing their jobs.
Exactly. It's getting
worse.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't really see that as catastrophizing. It happens. It's been happening to people a lot.
Well, thank you so much, because that's exactly the point. Catastrophizing, yes, it happens to people a lot.
And
yes, many people have lost jobs. Yes, many people don't have a place to live. So does that mean that they all walk around like scared bunnies and they're terrified?
No.
Some people do and some people don't. Now, do you think that the people who are scared and really worry about it do better than the ones who don't? No. Obviously, they're going to have a heart attack. They're worried so much, right?
All right.
So something separates you, and I hate to, I'll bring it to my favorite country. If we go to Haiti, for example, now we've had enough things happen in Haiti to worry about. And there are going to be folks in Haiti who are catastrophizing, and then there are going to be other folks who have dealt with some of the greatest, most difficult problems in life who are still okay. You'll go down to the Gulf, the same thing will happen. With the tsunami, the same thing happened. With tragedies, the same thing happened. There are going to be people who are caught up in the panic of tomorrow, and there are going to be people who are just going to simply say, we'll deal with it. Now, are you a parent?
No.
See, the thing would be, if you were a parent, you would probably not be worrying your kids. You would probably develop some part of you that would say to your kids, well, I don't want you guys to be afraid. I'm going to take care of it for you. But when you were a kid, there was nobody there to do that for you. You didn't have anybody who said to you, it's okay, sonny. It's going to be, what's your first name?
Thomas.
Thomas. You didn't have anybody who said, Thomas, it's going to be okay. Tom, it's okay, right? You didn't have a dad put his arm around you and said, hey, Thomas, don't worry about it, friend. We're going to be okay. We're going to get through this. You didn't have that, did you?
No.
You see where it comes from? So, Thomas, if you never felt safe in life, if you have never had anybody who said to you, it's going to be okay, then, of course, all you could do is try your very best to anticipate all the dangers and figure them out. So you asked the question, how do you get past it?
Well, what do you do
that's
in place
right.
of it?
What do you do in place? The beginning of it, Thomas, is to be present, is to remember we have a future and we have a past. And somehow Thomas has to find a way to embrace Thomas in the present. You have to say, okay, but here I am now. Here I am now, right this minute. How can I make the most out of this very moment? How can I find my essence here? And your essence, I'll tell you how you would find your essence. You know how Thomas would find his essence? Oh, it's funny. There's a dog in your life. Tell me about a dog.
What about him?
What about him? Do you have a dog?
Yeah.
Right. Tell me about that dog.
What do you want to know about him?
What kind of dog is he?
He's a mutt.
He's a mutt. And what does he look like?
He's black and tan.
Mm-hmm. How long have you had him?
13 years.
Wow. Hey, Thomas, does your dog ever get worried?
I don't know.
You don't know, right? He doesn't look very worried about the future, right? Except if he has to go out, you know, and you need to take him out. Do you ever go to your dog and just sit there when you're worried and pet his head and say, we'll be okay?
No.
That's your answer. It's right there. Something would happen between your hand and that dog, because your dog is very wise, because he lives in the present. So let me suggest, what's your dog's name, by the way?
What?
What is his name?
Shadow.
Shadow. Okay, oh, it's perfect. So, Thomas, I recommend that you have some meetings with Shadow. And when you get really, really scared, you let Shadow know that we're going to be okay. Because by doing that, you're going to let yourself know that you're okay, too.
But what is something that people can do in general, whether they have dogs or not? I mean, what do you put in place of that?
What you put in place of it is you say to yourself, this is all worry. It's all worry, and it's not going to come true, because it doesn't come true. All your fears don't come true. You just worry about them.
Okay.
Sometimes it really pays at this point in your life, when you have something like you do, to have a therapist that you could trust. It makes all the difference in the world, because you've never had anyone you could trust except Shadow. Nice to talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Thomas, for calling in. Well, I could just see that dog in his lap. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Christina. First of all, I just want to say I love your show. I have a quick question for you. You were talking about phobias. Now, my boyfriend has a phobia and catastrophizes about elevators, and I've tried, you know, I've actually told him, like, ask him, what do you think is going to happen, like, if we go on an elevator together? I'm going to be with you, you have your cell phone, like, if anything happens, you'll be okay. And he said, oh, but if it gets stuck, and I'll never be able to get out, and no one will come save me. And it's just, I don't know what to do, because we are going on vacation together very soon, and, you know, there's going to be elevators in the hotel, and I don't know what to do. I don't want him to panic. I hate to see him panic.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult, because phobias are different. Phobias are different than regular catastrophizing, because in phobias, there's an association in his brain that's almost chemical.
Mm-hmm.
You see, what's happening, his mind, he gets a kind of a claustrophobic
mm-hmm.
in elevators, and he feels
yep.
the air closing in.
Mm-hmm.
And the movement of the air will scare him. I've only
mm-hmm.
seen two things work. I've seen biofeedback work, and I've seen minor medications work.
Mm.
You know, when people have these phobias like this, because it's a simple thing. But let me ask you this question,
mm-hmm.
all right? How long have you had this boyfriend?
A little over a year.
Has he ever calmed down, ever?
No, we have been on vacation last summer, and, you know, there was an elevator there. We were on the fifth floor, and I took the stairs with him because he didn't feel comfortable, which is fine. I mean, you know, it's not a big deal, but...
Why do
you
take the stairs with him?
Yeah.
Why do you take the stairs with him, I'm asking you? Why don't you just take to the elevator and let him take the stairs?
Just to show him that, you know, if he's going to take the stairs, I'll take the stairs with him. Whichever
well, that,
makes
I mean, that's kind of interesting. In other words, you're feeding his phobia.
Really?
Well, you are. You're saying, you know, there's an elevator. There's nothing wrong with an elevator. You don't want to take the elevator. That's okay.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, I almost looked at it as a companionship. Like,
sure, I understand
I'll go
that.
With you up there.
I understand that. But, you know, best in life, when you have a wolf, and
mm-hmm.
this wolf is eating a person's personality, try not to feed it.
Mm.
You don't have to oppose it. You don't have to starve it. You don't have to say, well, you have to take the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
But you could say, well, I'm taking the elevator. I'll miss you. You take the stairs. I'll meet you downstairs.
Mm. Okay. All right. I mean, I don't know. I wish there was something I could do. And he says it feels almost like a coffin when he's in the elevator.
So, of course he does.
So the whole cutting off of, like, the air makes total sense to me.
Well, it doesn't make sense. Because it's all imagined.
Yeah.
I mean, it
yeah.
doesn't make sense. That's not the
mm-hmm.
issue. The sensation he gets, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't make sense. I wanted to ask you one more personal question. I was kind of a little reluctant because it's so personal.
Mm-hmm.
You've made love with your boyfriend, right?
Yes.
What's his response after you make love with him? Does he lay there and hold you, or does he get out
yes.
of bed right away?
No, he... you know, wants to cuddle, hold me, you know, just be with me. We're the best of friends. So
did you ever in an elevator?
No. No.
He wouldn't let you near him, right?
I'm not saying
make love in the elevator. I'm sorry. I heard what you just thought I suggested. No.
No, that would be a good idea.
It
would kind of coax him into the elevator.
Okay. Well, if you can get a private elevator and it's not consequential, we here
yeah,
at WBAI
right?
come up with many ideas. Please make sure you let us know how it works. If it's a cure, it's going to be interesting to bring into the psychiatric community.
Yeah.
Nice to talk to you, Christina.
Thank you. Thank
right.
you very much. Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm on the air.
Yes,
thank you for taking my call. I had, when I was listening to you speak about catastrophizing, I had thought of the same concept, but I thought of it as catastrophe pre-planning.
Uh-huh, okay, good.
Okay, in the sense of I was trying to deal with a difficult, like, financial issue, and I had to think about, well, what happens as a single woman, as you know, without any children? What do you want to do? What are you like trying to make up choices? So then I'm thinking, well, you know, I planned it out in my head. Okay, so you know, what could be the worst things that could happen to you? So maybe it's more like a worst case scenario. So what kind of mechanisms do you have to put in place to, you know, to keep your financial situation intact? So, in other words, well, at certain ages, you know, before less than 65, and I'm less than 65, your chief worry would be about being disabled. So, therefore, maybe you need disability insurance to take care of those kind of things. So I don't think it's a bad, I think it's useful to helping, like, allay your fears.
Sure,
prompt
if,
you into
if,
action.
Exactly. But okay. If it comes from fear,
yeah,
that's one thing. If you feel panic when you make those decisions, mm-hmm. that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But if it comes from your calm, mm-hmm. essential, benevolent self, mm-hmm. and you make those plans in that place, then it's a perfect way of dealing with the future as well.
Okay. So
thank
you're saying
you.
Really it's your motivation.
It's really the mood mm-hmm. that motivates you, yes.
Well, let me ask, because I had a question, too. I'm also trying to help a woman. She's 89, and she's, and she's dementia. She's kind of in stages of dementia. And we're trying to talk to her about if she has 24-hour day care, at some point she may have to go into a nursing home. So in terms of trying to get her to help her make choices, we're kind of doing the same kind of thing with her and saying, well, you know, think if you're on your own, there could be issues, you know, with you. Nobody.
You're trying to induce fear to make her make decisions.
I know. See that.
I know. But you know, one of the beauties about dementia is you escape fear.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
I thought about it in that way. Yeah, there's nothing to worry about.
I mean, there's nothing to really worry about.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in.
No problem. Thank you.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hi, Armand. How you doing? This is Angela.
Angela. Oh, Hi. The hero Angela.
Yes.
Hi there, Angela.
Hi. I just wanted to call and tell you thank you for all your support and everything you've done.
Well, you know, Angela, of all people to call, you help people more with dealing with catastrophizing than just about anybody I know. You know, you've spent your life in rehabilitation and working with people who perceive their infirmaries as major catastrophes and they could never get through them.
That's true.
And you are the person I know who has been always the positive light. Now listen, haven't you done something exciting recently with the Oprah Winfrey Show?
Yes, I have.
What did you do?
Well, I submitted an audition to be part of their reality program to hopefully have my own show to help people deal with exactly the issues of catastrophe and how they can get through it.
Well, great that you're a WBAI person. If people wanted, you need votes. Is that what you get?
Yes, I do.
And how do you get them? What do people do? They go to the Oprah Winfrey?
They go to the Oprah.com, go to the OWN network, and look for Wildcard Angela, and I'm the third one down on your left.
So they get a chance to see you and evaluate you. And if they think that you're somebody who would do good for this world, they could vote for you accordingly.
Yes, they could.
Nice thing, Angela. Thank you. Thank you so much for the work you do.
Thanks so much now, Armand.
All right.
Okay.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. Hello there. Hello there. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Good. Who is this?
My name is Sherry from New Jersey.
Hello, Sherry. You got to turn down your radio, Sherry.
Okay, I'm in another room. I have a situation that I know that you can help me with in dealing with senior issues. My husband, who's just turning 80, I've noticed, and I'm 25 years younger than him, I've just noticed in the last year or so how irrational his behavior has become, how combative he is, how argumentative he is. And it's very hard to talk with him or deal with it. And I just go around the house just not saying anything to avoid arguments. And I'm at a point where I just don't know how to deal with it anymore.
Yeah. Have you told him about how you feel?
I've mentioned it to him, and he just simply says it's me. You know, he has outbursts. And he says things that really just... they make no sense. whatsoever.
Okay, so first step, let me try to make this brief for you. The first step is for you to see a therapist. You, for yourself.
Okay.
Because you need support. And then when you see this therapist at some point, you will invite him in with you to talk to that therapist. And that may be a way that he gets the attention. Because it sounds like he's going downhill, and it sounds like you're going downhill with him. And we don't want that to happen.
Yes, I've just become so stressed and developed high blood pressure, and I feel it coming on. I just, you know, when I'm walking around the house, I'm about ready to just, I just don't know what to do.
Find some help. Where do you live?
I'm in Maplewood, New Jersey.
Maplewood, New Jersey. Lots of, ask your friends if they know a decent counselor that maybe fits in your insurance network.
Okay.
You know, find somebody who you can speak with. And or call my office and we'll find you somebody.
Okay, and your number?
Well, you'll get that through the internet. Go to thepositivemind.com. Okay? But
Thank you so much.
Mainly find, ask any of your friends if they know of anybody who they could recommend.
Yeah, you know, my mom was a geriatric nurse, and so I'm familiar with seniors.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of seniors as they, some seniors, when they get older, they become mean-spirited.
Bitter,
and spiteful. And
they also need to be touched. Has your husband rejected touch?
No.
Mm-hmm.
But when he goes through his changes, I'm at a point where...
You don't even want to touch him.
No.
I understand. Maybe you have to get him a dog.
We have a dog.
Okay. Then you've got all the cures I can think of.
But he won't walk the dog, and he used to love the dog, and now he ignores the dog.
Something's really going wrong. Time for you to get into some kind of counseling. You have to consult with somebody.
Thank you.
Okay, Sherry, thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Listen, friends, deep down inside, there's a universe that's benevolent, and it supports us completely. We know that we are grounded in the present. When our minds become quiet, we realize that essence is real. And not simply an idea. It's a thing that is most real in existence, the very foundation of existence itself. It's not the future, it's here. It's our present. When we experience the truth as we know it, we feel solid, steady, supported. We realize that the ground is the only real security in life. And that's what gives us immense courage. We have to be here. When you're worried about the future, or when you feel yourself negative, irritable, nasty, remember about here. Remember about your courage. This is the real meaning of faith. Faith is not belief, but a real immediate knowing that comes from a belief. Faith without experience is belief. Faith with experience brings reliable guidance. So when your essence emerges, there's a ground that you have that you could be on. And if you look at the future from there, you find all of the fears and all of the worries do disappear. But it's finding that spot, my friends, finding that spot. And sometimes you need a puppy, or you need a friend, or you need somebody to help you along the way. Hey, I'll be back with you next week, my friends, on Tuesday at 1 p.m. This is Armand DeMille. You want to send me an email? It's armand@thepositivemind.com. Be back with you soon.